Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top, and how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. It doesn't happen often. As a matter of fact, I literally think you could count it on one hand. And this is the number of billion-dollar plus real estate teams on an annual basis within the entire real estate industry. We have been lucky enough on this program, on this show, to have several. And today, we have another. We're going to be spending time with Adam Hergenrother, the founder and CEO of Livian. Adam is going to walk through, number one, his journey into the real estate industry, but number two, he's going to tell you all of the things you need to know to get into production and then stay there. The way that he simplifies large businesses and the way that every business owner, and whether that's a business of one or a business of 50, needs to think about what they do on a daily basis. This story is absolutely unbelievable. It goes from the absolute lows to the highest highs the real estate business has to offer. Friends, buckle up. This is Adam Hergenrother. And today I am joined by Adam Hergenrother, a dear friend and mentor. Adam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you. And Jason, thanks for taking the time to do all these interviews for everyone that's listening. I mean, you're adding a lot of value to a lot of people's lives. And I know how much time and energy goes into these. So thanks for all that you do.
What a nice thing to say. Thank you very much. So we're going to talk all things real estate, Adam, because you have teams across the entire fruited plain, coast to coast, doing the most. We're going to get there. But before we do, I want to start at the beginning. Every one of us has their first day. Tell us the journey. How did you find your way into the greatest industry in the world?
Yeah, well, I love how you phrase that. You know, so for me, you know, it started off, middle school was really an interesting time for me. I was trying to please everybody. I was trying to be somebody that wasn't. I was really kind of lost, really insecure with myself, would make up little lies like, hey, I wore that sweatshirt too, right? Just stuff like that, that just like, just didn't even make any sense. When I look back at my life and I was like, what was I doing? And then, you know, I came a freshman in college, high school, and I ended up, I was 100 pounds overweight. I was failing classes and I was, you know, that role model student that you wanted your kid to hang out with. And I was into light recreational drugs and stuff. And, you know, Jason, you know, two weeks into the school year, I woke up one day and it was just like, what am I doing with my life? And, you know, people ask about that moment. And like, maybe it was accumulation of just years of just, you know, suffering internally and then using food as an outlet for it or whatever it was. I just said, you know, it's not going to happen anymore. And the group that I was hanging out with of individuals was, they were not good people either. In fact, I think the majority of them are either in jail or dead, unfortunately. They were also just lost too. And I ended up leaving that group that day. Actually, what happened is I went home and I put on Celine Dion, which I know you're a big fan.
If I had a dollar for every time I put on Celine Dion and then changed my life.
Changed your life, dude. It was like, I just remember putting that on a CD and just letting it go. And I was in between like crying and laughing. And I was using a lot of positive affirmation at that time of life. Like, what do I want to kind of look like? And my dad worked nights and he came in and I was still up and it was like 12:30 in the morning. And he walked in and he's like, what are you doing? Like, cause he's like, I'm crying. I'm listening to Celine Dion. He's like, what's happening here? And, I said, you know, I'm just not happy with my life, blah, blah. And he's like, well, that's great. You can do two things. One, you can accept your life and just accept what it is, or two, you can change it. And he shut the door and walked out of the room. Like, it was like, great. But it was like, it was such a, I was like, wow, he's right. Right. That's it. Like, I either can accept this or I can make a change. And so the next morning I woke up and I had decided that I was going to make a change in my life, Jason. And I changed my entire life. And so I stopped, literally just stopped hanging out with any of the people I was hanging out with.
Okay. I gotta ask. Cause
you told me there's going to be no interruptions, Jason. You're going to like,
I can't help myself. Cause I'm curious.
Yeah.
That's such a profound idea. And it makes sense to my 44, which by the way is still millennial, to my 44-year-old mind. I'm a millennial. Everyone knows it. That makes sense to me today. But you're talking about being 16 years old.
I was 15 at the time.
So I don't really get it, dude. Yeah. Like you go to school the next day at 15 and then make a complete change in your social circle. How does it even happen?
Yeah, it was, you know, again, that's why I think it was just years of just, I knew the entire time, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, when I got in there, that I was doing this, and it was not the life that I was supposed to live. And I didn't know what my life was supposed to be. It was just accumulation. And one day it just all hit me. And I was like, I'm not going to suffer like this anymore. I'm just not going to allow my life just to be about other people or making them, you know, make myself feel like I need to be who they want me to be in any parts of my life. And I'm obviously saying it better now than I would back then, but that's essentially what this shift was, right? And it wasn't like the voice inside my head talking to me and telling me to do this. It was like this, it was a bigger movement, and that's what gave me the energy to do it. And so again, literally I went from like having a circle that was like protection and there were rugged people and to going to nothing. And I had started playing football that week too. And this is why sports is so important to me. And so I went directly all in on football. I lost 100 pounds within a year, right? People say you can't do that. You can. I've kept it off ever since. And, you know, I started trying really hard. You know, school did not come naturally to me, but I worked harder than everybody else did. And, you know, turned that around. I, again, lost 100 pounds, joined the football team. That kind of gave me the focus that I needed. You know what it really did though, and this will come up later in our story, is it gave me the confidence to be able to go out there and do what I set my mind to do, knowing that I didn't need to rely on anybody else. I can go do this. Of course, in business, I learned a lot how to succeed through others. But at that point, it was like, I needed to get me okay first. I needed to get my inner state, who I was, to a position that was ready to then go out there and bring that into the outer world. So that happened. I got into UVM, which is the University of Vermont, and I was on a gap program because of my grades. First semester, I had failed basically all of my classes. And so it was still bad. And I had to get a 3.0 or better. But Vermont had this guaranteed admissions program, which was, we guarantee you in, you have to get a 3.0 or better your first semester, and then you can reapply. And there was 11 of us that did that. And I was the only one that made, I got 3.2 my first semester. Again, I'm not naturally smart or book smart like people, that a lot of people are out there. I just worked harder at that point in my life. And I was really gung-ho about being in business, about making money. In fact, you know, we'll put a pin on that for a second. Throughout my college career, I started working. I got asked to participate my senior year in what's called Advanced Honors Wall Street. It was the top six kids in the business school. And we actually started working on Wall Street, and Wall Street paid for us. So they flew us down every week for the entire year. We would make high yield bond recommendations. It was Hulu and Loki, Howard and Zukin, if people know that company. And so we were working on there. So, and at the end of it, when I got out of college, I asked one of our professors, I said, why did you choose me? I wasn't the smartest kid. And he said that, you know, you just worked harder than everybody else. And I asked him one other question, Jason. I think you'll appreciate this, and our listeners will too, who want to hire people. This professor would give an exam, and the average would be like a 24. And he would always scale it up so that people didn't fail their classes. And so afterwards, I asked him, I said, you know, Jim Gaddy, is Professor Gaddy, I said, why did you make your exams like basically nothing like everyone studied for? Nobody wanted to take his course, but everyone who after graduated went to him for jobs because they knew he was the hardest professor. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Adam, if I had made the test so that everyone could get a B, I would never know who our rock stars are. He said, because every test, somebody would get a 50, somebody would get a 65, and maybe somebody got a 70. And that's how I picked our group. And so like sometimes we have to, it's just such a wonderful, I've always remembered that leadership lesson from in terms of just, you know, sometimes you got to make the situation really tough to see who can stand out and who you want to be on your team. So I'll come back. So freshman year, I had a roommate who wasn't a roommate. Jason, you probably had one of those maybe, who didn't go to the school, but lived in my dorm room Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And he was one of my best friends, you know, in high school, and his dad owned a car dealership. And at the time I had like, call it like $700 in my bank account. And he came to me and he said, you know, I think we can buy this car for like $500 each. And I think we can double our money. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. So I gave him $500. Again, that was like all I had. My parents, I had loans to get in school. So it's not like my parents were helping me out. We didn't have money. So that was literally it. And I was working during college too to pay for the things I was going through. And We gave him $500. Like a week and a half later, we each made like $1,500. And I was like, it was the first taste that I ever had of a leverage. I never saw the vehicle. I never went and did work on the vehicle. I just used my money. And so then I said, well, keep it. Give me my $500 back. Keep the rest. And we started reinvesting. So over the course of like 8-9 months, we each made about $60,000. And the funny thing is, I also then learned about contracts, because at some point he woke up and said, well, dude, like, you're not doing anything anymore, and I actually don't need your help anymore. So, you know, good luck, right? Basically.
But it must have felt like all the money in the world.
Dude, I felt more wealthy that time than I do right now. Like, honestly, because it was like, it was leverage is there. And this is kind of what led into real estate, though, because then I took the money and I was like, well, what am I going to do with this? And I was smart enough, I don't know why, to not blow it, right? Like, I was a junior in college at this point. And so I was like, going into my junior year. And they had these new, so this was, to paint the year for people listening, this was 2002 going to 2003. So we knew what the market was doing then, right? I went to school in 2000, I graduated in 04. And I bought a new construction condo for $160,000. It wasn't even started yet. By the time it was done, it was worth like 190, right? Because the market was just increasing. So I sold the piece of real estate and I used a real estate agent. And when I went to the closing, we ended up selling it for like $224,000. I paid a real estate commission. And I was like, dude, this was like half. And I was working at the time, I was making $32,000 a year as a commercial underwriter in real estate. So that was also helping me out. I was underwriting these deals. And I remember paying like a, whatever, $15,000, $16,000 commission. I was like, dude, this is like half my salary. And then in early 2006, I got my real estate license in like March of 2006, after kind of going through selling a unit, getting into my 5-unit, I renovated it myself. You know, we got that up and going. I realized of how to use, like, you know, as complete appraised values to be able to pull equity from. So I was learning all of that. And I'm like, wow, this game's really fun, right? No matter what, everyone's in it. And then when the market was crashing, I just had this feeling that, like, you know, I can't be an employee of somebody. I'm just not an employee. Nobody can put me in a box. And it wasn't like my job was bad. I had an assistant. At this point, I was making $55,000 a year. And this was back in, you know, 05 going into 06. So it was decent money. I felt really wealthy. Like it was a state of mind for me. But anyways, and I was just like, I need to go out and venture off. And so real estate had been the thing that had been knocking at my door. And I got my real estate license. I borrowed $8,000 to start my first business, because the rest of the money that I had went into real estate, actual investments. Borrowed $8,000. I took $4,000 of that and went to a Howard Britton conference. And again, the first week and a half of me ever getting my real estate license, I flew out there, spent half my savings that I had, that was borrowed, by the way, to go to a Howard Britton conference. The first hour that I was there, I was like, I can leave, basically, but I didn't. I saw all these people on stage making, you know, selling $20 million, $30 million in real estate, because that was a huge amount. And I was like, I need to go do that. And I came home, I put my head down, I was working in a 400 square foot apartment in Burlington and didn't have an office. And I put 3 homes under contract in the first 28 days I was a real estate agent.
Okay, stop everything. Did you hear what he just said? I'm not going to let it get past without calling it out. What he said is, I got into the business and the first thing I did was spend half of the money I had to go to a Howard Britton event. Now, if you don't know Howard, you don't know Star Power, because that was back in the day, don't worry about it. Not the point. The point is that Adam and so many of the other people that we've had on this show, whether you're talking about Bridget Potterton or you're talking about Christy Cannon, I could list the names. Mo Anderson is the best example. They all said something. They all said, I knew I needed to learn blank. And so I went out and I learned it. And then I did nothing else. That's genius in its own way. When I say they did nothing else, meaning they learned it, they knew it, then they just went and put it into action. They didn't learn it for learning's sake. They weren't intellectual tourists. They were literally showing up to learn skills and then go take actions. That was the order of events. And I'm telling you, it comes up almost every single time we talk to somebody. Here's my question. What are you in need of learning right now, and who is going to teach it to you? What's the voice you need in your head? I believe this show is one of them. What's the next one? What class do you need to go take? what mastermind you need to go get into, what business consultant do you need to go talk to, which conversation and which class do you need to take today to propel you to where you want to go tomorrow? That's a question worth answering.
I worked 7 days a week. I worked 12-hour days. It wasn't work to me, Jason. It wasn't. Like, I really valued money at the time. I wanted money. I went after it. And I remember I showed up at my first team meeting, not for a team for me, but like in for Remax. I was at Remax at the time. And I walk in, it was the first time I'd walked in the office. And people were looking at me and they're asking, like, they saw me on the board as like the number one agent that month. And they're like, didn't you just get your license? I was like, yeah, like less than a month ago. And they're like, what'd you do? How did you get 3 homes under contract? And I actually thought it was low. I thought it was wrong. I thought it was, I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm trying really hard. They're like, no. Like, I remember this, and they stopped me and they go, no, Adam, like, how did you actually do that? Not like there. And I remember turning the question around. I go, well, what did you do all week? What did you do? And then you come to realize that most real estate agents, they're not professionals. They just don't treat it as a full-time job. And that's the beginning of my real estate career, buddy.
You know, it's so incredible. We if you haven't heard the Cody Gibson episode of this show, please go listen to it. Because Adam, he says something similar. He says he gets his license and the office manager says, look, man, if you can sell a house a week, you're going to be great.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know enough to know how insane that is. So he sells a house a week for the first 3 months. And then he's in this last month and he goes and he says, you know, I missed this week's quota.
Yeah.
And the guy laughs and says, what do you mean quota? That was just a suggestion. No one sells this many homes. He didn't sell another home for 6 months after hearing that, Adam.
Wow. I remember this lady that went and developed an area that nobody could develop. And I had her speak at one of our things, and her entire presentation was called Naivete. And she said the only reason why she got this, I mean, talking like $300 million development on the waterfront that people tried for 50 years to develop, and she did it. And people were like, how did you do it? She's like, what do you mean? How did I do it? Like, that was this. And so she gives this presentation on leadership on naivete because she's like, I was just so naive. I just went in there like, what do you mean we can't do this? And like, and she just got it done.
By the way, if you're new to our program, the show is called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. It's written from the namesake of the book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, which was written by Gary Keller, Jay Papazan, and Dave Jenks. May he rest in peace. And Gary tells the story of getting into the business when interest rates are 18% and having no idea that that was high, really, and still selling his quota of homes that year because, Adam, he didn't know. He wasn't supposed to.
Exactly right. Yep. Love that. It's the first nugget right
there. It's unbelievable. So as you look out on the world now, and we talked about your exploits before the show began. So everyone in the audience now wants to know, okay, great. How do I sell 7,000 homes a year? So what is it that y'all do so well? How can you help us? When you answer, I want you to imagine everyone listening to this show, although we have a broad range across all industries, speak to the real estate agent in the audience and assume that they're driving the car right now. And the question in their head is, what is the change? What's the thing that you can teach us that I can do tomorrow to make my life and my business better?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. I think there's a few things I would start with. Gary, you know, obviously is a mentor to you and I both, Jason, and we've known him for a long period of time, Gary Keller, that is. And one of the first things he said to me back in 2010, right before I opened up the Market Center in Vermont, he said, you know, you got to think big. And that's a common theme in, you know, Keller Williams' Think Big, particularly early on during that phase. Jason, you remember how much that was used? It's not as used quite as much, but he explained it in a way that I've never forgotten. And I've kind of taken it and really applied this to my life early on. And so the way I always think about thinking big is like, anytime you think about something, whether you want to have a better relationship with your partner, you want to build a big business, you want to sell 100 homes, you want to sell 50 homes, you want to sell a home a week, whatever it is, every time you think of something, you create a box. That box then creates the who, the how, the what of how you actually accomplish the goal. So anytime you think of any goal that you have in your life, you're automatically setting up some box. It doesn't matter even if it's a $1 billion box, you're still setting a box in there. And the reason why that's so important is because the first who is you. It has to be you have to be the one is who you have to become to sell 1,000 homes is different than somebody who has to come to sell one home a year, right? And how you get there to sell 10 homes a year, right? There's a lot of different hows you can do that. In fact, you could just turn your badge upside down, walk around Costco and probably sell 10 homes a year doing that. the why has to be different as well too, because the pure suffering that you will go through during that phase to get to a bigger goal has to be there. So when you start off, I know it's a prescriptive thing for me. It's thinking plus action equals results. And so one of the thinking or the action has to change first in order for your result to change. So if you were sitting here and you had a lot of us had tough years last year, right? You had a tough year last year, maybe didn't hit your goal, but you got renewed energy. You're listening to this and you're ready to go. The first thing you need to do is go, okay, well, maybe I sold 20 homes last year, right? I'm just going to use that as an example. So now I'm going to go out. How do I sell 100 homes? How do I sell 100 homes next year? And as you ask that question, just by simply asking the question, will change your thinking around it and then has to change your action. And if the action is, in order to sell 100 homes, I need to now lead generate or have conversations with people 4 hours, 5 hours a day, then that's what it takes to be able to do that. So the thinking dictates your actions. Your actions is what actually translates any result of your life. If you want to go lose weight, right, and you want to lose 20 pounds, you have to take a different level of action, which then is usually precipitated by some level of thinking. I want to lose weight. I want to get fit. I want to go run a marathon. You know, I want to go to the ballet, whatever it is that you want to do. You now have to have a thinking plus an action, which changes your result. Then it creates a virtuous cycle, because now what you're building is the confidence to constantly increase your goals, knowing that it's going to be very difficult, very challenging, but you can take the next step. You know that by increasing your goals each time, by thinking bigger each time, it's going to elevate who you have to become. And for me, business is nothing but a conduit for personal growth. I mean, nobody would sign up for lawsuits. Nobody would sign up for 7 people leaving in the same day. Nobody would sign up to come in there and have your leadership team tell you that there's this issue that came in there and you're dumbfounded. I mean, you get it, Jason. Like, it's just, nobody would sign up for those things. So, and you have to be prepared at each level to up that part of you to stay in there long enough.
Okay. Well, let me push back a touch though, because I'm going to play the part of the guy driving in the car or the gal who says, yeah, I didn't sign up for any of those things. I signed up because I wanted to make more money. So you're on a quest for personal growth. I'm on the quest to just be richer.
Yeah.
Or do you think I'm on the wrong quest? Because I talk to people all the time and I say, well, what do you want over the next 5 years? And then they give me a dollar amount. I'm not judging those people, yep. But I know you're having the same conversations.
Yeah. You know, I think ultimately money is a byproduct of things that you can do, and it's a mechanical aspect to life. But I think if people are using money, and we'll circle around this a couple of times, if people are using money as a way to try to make themselves feel better every single day, it's a game you'll never win. And we know this because there's plenty of billionaires, there's plenty of millionaires. And in fact, Hollywood has the most suicide rate and divorce rate and anything else, and they have fame and money. And it's kind of like Will Smith said in his book, Will, when he was like, in his autobiography, he was like, you know, on the pursuit of trying to be number one at everything, I felt good. The minute I got there, I felt horrible because I realized there was no other place to go. And so if we're searching, there's nothing, again, there's a mechanical nature to money. We need to make money in order to pay for things that are there. But if you're using money as a way to constantly, I always called it like being worldly. Like, so you're going to go out to the world to try to make yourself feel better inside. Now, there does come a point in money where you need a certain amount. So I think fundamentally you set up your goals and your actions so that you can go out there and hit the dollar amount that you want, right? So maybe that's you selling 15 homes a year produces a certain dollar amount that you have. It doesn't, at some point, it doesn't matter how much money you're making or how little you're making. You have to always be willing to ask the question, which is, am I using money as a way to feel better? Because if you are, it doesn't matter how much. Think about somebody driving right now. If you were, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, if you said, I have all the things that I have now that I have currently right now, would I be like in an immense state of joy? And most people say, yes. They say, if I was making the amount of money, if I had the things that I had, when I was 15, if I had said, and when I'm 35 or 40, if I had these things, I'm going to be, you know, sitting outside next to a fruit tree, injecting me with pure energy all the time, right? Like, I'm just going to feel blissful, right? And you're going to say, yes, I would. But yet, then every time you get there, you're like, well, there's something more. There's something missing. So this is the trap that people fall into, is when you buy into thinking that something outside is going to permanently change my state, and so that I'm never going to not have to be satisfied again. every time you go accomplish something, it's a checkbox, but then you find yourself having to go back and reapply the same process just to get that energy again. I always ask the question, which is, why don't you just feel that way anyways, and then bring that into work? You know, people, I was on a podcast the other day, Jason, somebody said, you know, how do you find your passion? And I said, it's a beautiful question. It's the same thing almost about money. And I think the listeners can take it both ways. You know, that's a wonderful question. People should absolutely search for that, ask that question. But I turn it around and say, why wouldn't you want to be passionate about everything and then take that into everything that you do? I don't mean that you have to, you can always honor and respect what's happening. It doesn't mean you have to like it. It doesn't mean you have to not change it or you don't deal with it, but you can honor and respect it. And why not be passionate about the fact that you get to be in a leadership position, which is it's a wonderful privilege. Why don't you be passionate about the fact that you are in real estate at the greatest time to be in real estate right now? That is a wonderful opportunity and privilege for us to help change the industry. Why don't you be passionate about the fact that you get to work with this client who's never bought a house before and you get to serve them on the highest level that you can? Why not be passionate about the fact that you get to work with a really tough agent on the other side of this who doesn't see it the same way you do? So you can take all of these moments and bring your wholeness, yourself into that, which then, by the way, makes you a fierce business competitor because you're no longer tied to the outcome of it, which then makes you a lot more money in your life. You know, for me, one of the things we didn't get to, and when I first got into real estate, I had set this goal of once I make $500,000 in net income, that somehow there was going to be this cloud dripping rain on me and I was going to feel perfect for the rest of my life, right? Like I had bought into the definition of go be successful. And really how I've learned to come to define success for most people is most people want, when they say go be successful, Jason, what they're really saying is go get enough power, money, fame, letters after your initials, whatever, you know, leverage, so that you can then go out there and control the situations around you so that the situations hit your inner experience the way that you're comfortable with. That's really what being successful, what most people say. If I have enough money, I can control the people. If I have enough money, I can control the situation so it unfolds the way I want it to. Well, then you're always waking up anxious. You're always scared. You're always nervous. And if you're really honest with yourself, everyone will usually admit that, right? Like, yes, okay, I got there, but now how do I keep it, right? So When I set out for this, I remember when I was about 26 or 27, I went from like $32,000, $55,000 in salary. Then I made like $75,000. And then it was like $180,000. Then it was like high twos. And then I hit $500,000, right? And I remember walking into a holiday party at my mom's house, who's the most unassuming person. And she said, I was like, hey, you know, mom, I made $500,000 this year. And expecting like this, I said it loud enough for other people to hear too, by the way, like just like wanted to... Yeah. Do it. And she's like, that's great. Can you pass the ketchup? And I had been feeling the fact that like this wasn't working for me for a long, meaning that it wasn't making me feel this wonderful success that everyone tells me about. Right. And so I stopped and I went home and I was like, do I even care about this? Like, I know they don't, but like, what's the whole point of this? And that's when I started making this about an inward journey of trying to feel this wonderful joy and lightness to it. And it didn't happen for years. I went through a whole lot of iterations, but what it did do is it allowed me to let go of the outcome and actually go after and build businesses because I no longer had this needing things to happen. I went out, built construction, market centers, expansion teams, right? I went out there in full force and started building these different things that are out there and it allowed you to go out there in a different way and interact with it. You know, I always say personal growth, spirituality is not about changing what you do. It's about the change. It's about the part of you that's interacting with what you do. And that to me is a big difference.
I love that. All right, cool. So if number one is think big, where do I go from there? So now I've built a box. Yeah. I've come to grips with the fact that I have to change the way that I think. That's ultimately going to change my actions. As I start to have success with that, I have a virtuous cycle. What's next?
Yeah, there's two things, like two and three would be the things that I would, well, number one is you have to keep it simple. And we can elaborate, but I mean, it's people really want to make real estate complicated to make it feel like it's harder than it needs to be hard. And we get caught up with that too as well. It's what works for you to put you in front in conversations, opportunities to present a buyer or listing agreement to a buyer or seller or an investor is what you need to be doing on an everyday basis. When I got into real estate every Friday, I would buy cupcakes from Costco, and I put my card in them. I'd go around and I would door knock to all the homes. And that literally every time I would do that, I would get three or four appointments. I would just get three or four appointments. It is so simple, right? Like, and again, that was a little bit era before the internet and CRMs were really coming in there, but I kept it so simple. And it just, you go out there and just keep doing the activities that work. The problem is once something becomes successful, people then look for cheats. They want to find a way to make it easier or harder for them, even that's because of what they end up doing, instead of staying with what got them there in the first place. And so as you build your organization, as you build your individual business real estate career up, keep it very simple, please. Because the more complicated you make this, it's harder for you to explain your vision, it's harder for people to buy into it, and it's harder for you to get up and act.
It's such a sage point that you make. And you can go back on our show and you can listen to our episode with Jeff Glover, our episode with Ben Kinney, or our episode with Kristen Cole. And even our episode with Sarah Reynolds, we touched on the same topic, Adam, which was like, every day I have to wake up and I can judge my day by the number of meaningful real estate conversations that I have. And everyone has pretty much said the same thing, which is, I don't care if in a TCPA-friendly compliant way you open a phone book.
Yes.
By the time you get to the end of it, you will have had a bunch of them. Or if you want to go stand at the grocery store, or like the same way you'd sell cable TV could be the way. And Kristen Cole, she said it. She went door to door on a horse.
Yes, so of course she did.
Because she loves riding horses. Yes. And she's like, look, at the end of the day, the horse started the conversation because people said, oh my gosh, you're on a horse. And the next thing you know, she's talking real estate. Why does everybody rush to complicate?
You know, I think as you, in the beginning, you do a lot of things and if you're being successful, and then you start to add on things thinking it's going to bring you more business. And what it does is it overcomplicates the business, right? And if you're small and your business is overcomplicated, the larger it gets, it's going to be even more overcomplicated. And I went through all those challenges myself, right? Like it's like, and so if you keep it simple as a small company and you can keep it simple as a big company and you can keep it simple as a very big company, then everybody has clarity. And that's what people are looking for. They want to essentially be told what to do, even buyers and sellers, without being told what to do, right? They want professional guidance and they want to keep, you want you to have a clear, concise message. You need to be clear and concise, and you just have to have a very clear set of actions that you take every day.
It's genius. By the way, and Adam, you tell me if you agree, because here's what I'm going to say. Everybody listening to this show today could simply commit to having 50 cups of coffee with 50 different people this week. Now, you'd be zooted out of your mind on caffeine. I will give you that.
You're decaf.
But if you had 50 cups of coffee every week with 50 people, Adam, you'd make untold riches and never have to look for a deal.
Ever. I mean, you'd probably have the largest real estate company that's out there. I mean, if you had 50 cups a week of people. You know, Jason, we have on your point, so I wholeheartedly agree. We have what's called, and the math is always in the path, you probably talked about on the show before, but we have what's called do the two, right? Which is like, if you hold two appointments per week, and defining that, which is basically it's something that we have t-shirts made out of it. It's part of our entire culture. It's called do the two, which is if you hold two appointments per week, right? And definition of holding an appointment, it's not a friend that you see in McDonald's line, dude. This is like an appointment is somebody where you have the opportunity to present them with a buyer seller agreement. Obviously that's there, and that's somebody that's new. If you do this math, right? So if you do two a week, and let's just say you get 4 weeks off a year, it's 48, it's 96 appointments per year, right? And you just take MREA percentages and you convert 75% of them. It's around 65 buyer or seller listing agreements that you're going to have at the end of that. If you convert 75% of those, it's about 50. If then if you sell 90% at the closing table, that's 45 deals a year. So it's very simple. If you go out there and you hold two appointments per week for 48 weeks, you will have approximately 40 to 45 transactions closed at the end of the year. It's that simple.
Friends, I'm not going to ruin it by pontificating about what he just said, other than to say this, you just heard absolute wisdom and you just heard the math. And so if you're doing anything less than that, or you're looking up and saying, I have agents in my world and they're not hitting that. That's the conversation. There's nowhere to hide, Adam, exactly. In that conversation.
That's exactly right. It's simple as that.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. So if step one is think big, step two is keep it simple. What's the third thing I should have in my brain?
Say no. And really what say no means is, as we talked about keeping it simple, saying no, you're going to have to say no to a lot of things. and you're gonna have to say no to things. And what I really, there's two aspects to this. Number one is, as you start building a business, becoming successful, you're gonna have to say no to increasing your personal life. Because the biggest mistake that I see people making is when they start to become more successful, they actually start saying yes to a lot of things that put pressure on their business to perform to fund their personal life. And the minute that starts happening, it starts to remove you from making sound business decisions because you're now concerned about maintaining a certain lifestyle and a certain image that you can no longer say no to. So it's not about not having fun with your money, but there should be buckets. I always teach that there should be four buckets in your life. You should have a tax bucket, an investment bucket, a security bucket, and a fun bucket. And every time you make money every month, you can have whatever your percentage is. It should be 30% minimum in your tax bucket. That should be the first thing that kind of goes out there. Your fun bucket can be enough to get a massage a month. It could be saving up for a vacation. Whatever it is, you have your buckets. But if you keep saying yes, that is going to leak into your personal life. Then it starts leaking in your business life because then you start saying yes to a bunch of other things that took you away from what made you successful in the first place. And so as you build your business, I mean, I think what does Warren Buffett say? 99 out of 100, he says no. And there's also a bunch of things people will sell you in real estate that you just don't need. So it's also about saying no. There's a lot of people that will want to join your team that you need to say no to. There's a lot of people that want to be employees of yours that you need to say no to because for many reasons. So learning to say no, specifically in real estate, both on your personal financial side, your business financial side, and how you grow your organizations will keep it very, very simple. You know, Steve Jobs, when he came back into Apple in 1997, Apple was losing about $1.3 billion a year. That's a lot. And they had literally 90 days left of cash, right? So when he came in there, Apple was working on over 200 different products at the time. In the first like 7 to 14 days, Steve came in there and brought the number from 200 down to 10. And then the first month, they brought it down to 1, which is the iPod, right? So he removed a bunch of bloat, priorities, removed all of those and focused on one. And the company in 12 months went from losing 1.3 to netting almost $400 million in profit. And how he did that was by saying no. It was always by saying no and simplifying the things that's there.
You know, the science behind saying no. Now, Steve Jobs didn't have this problem because he just walked in and said no and didn't care what you thought of him or it. But when they study this, the reason that people don't say no more often is because they find it uncomfortable to say no. And if you're out there in podcast land and you're struggling with that, check out the book, The Power of the Positive No.
Yeah.
This is a book that's going to give you models on how to say no to people and they'll still like you after.
Yes.
That's the art. Get better at saying no.
Yeah, I love that.
Cool. I love it, Adam. Think big, keep it simple, say no more often. There's no question that this is the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other thing, the only other last piece I would add is that, and I know you talk about this a lot, but it's so true, is that no one ever does succeed alone. I mean, you really do not. I don't care if you're an individual agent, you don't succeed without mentorship. You don't succeed without clients. You don't succeed without your partner standing up and helping you out during some tough times. No one succeeds alone. I don't care if you're an individual contributor or not. Everyone succeeds with other people. So find a really wonderful culture to be around that supports the heck out of you so you can withstand some of those very dark times.
Brilliant. I love it. Adam, we need to invite you now to the lightning round.
Love it.
Now, we are going to ask you a series of questions in quick succession. We want the first thing that comes to your mind. They get harder as we go. Are you ready, sir?
Let's do it.
What is your favorite color?
Black.
What is your favorite food?
Salad.
Stop the lightning round. Salad?
Dude, like it.
What, did you lose a bet? What do you, salad? What kind of salad?
It's so, man, my wife makes the best salads every night. And it's like you put a little like fresh hummus in there, fresh avocado, tomatoes, onions. We have this homemade balsamic dressing that we use, a little fresh cheese. I mean, dude, that's all every day. We eat this massive big salads. And it's, well, it was funny because I was on vacation and the thing that I craved the most coming back was our salad. Like it was like, so that's why it's still fresh in my mind right now because they're so good.
There it is. Salad. It's either the best thing or it's like living in a gulag. Friends, you choose. Adam, what is your favorite movie?
First thing that comes to mind was Commando. Do you remember that movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Well, I remember that movie. Are you kidding me? That's fantastic.
That was like the best with that scene where Arnold came out. Like, yeah, yeah.
It's so, my friend is dead tired. It's fantastic.
Right,
it's
I know.
That's so good. All right, cool. What sound do you love? What's the sound that you love hearing?
Silence.
It's great. Is there a podcast other than ours that you like to listen to that you think our listeners would benefit from hearing?
Michael Singer does a Temple of the Universe, which if you're into the intersection between, you know, worldly life and inner life, that'd be a wonderful place to start.
By the way, if you haven't read The Untethered Soul, Michael's a friend of our program. We go to the Temple of the Universe every now and then on a Sunday and hang out. You can still go to Gainesville, Florida, again, and listen to him speak every weekend. Amazing. It is awesome. Adam, where is the best place to vacation in the world?
I would say in the middle of the Tetons in the winter, out back. I skinned 9,000 vertical feet one day at 3 a.m. in the middle of the Tetons in a snowstorm, skiing 50-degree pitches for 9 hours, and just lost in that, to me, is the best place you can be.
Friends, there it is. You heard it here. That was Adam Hergenrother. Adam, you are not just a friend to every real estate agent, but you are a friend to the entire industry. Thank you for moving it forward and everything you're doing.
Jason, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate you.
I'm going to tell you this. I don't know. And it's not because I'm not a popular dude. Friends, you know, I know the people. I don't know very many people who sell 7,000 plus homes a year. And here's the other thing, either do you, because there are just not very many people that do it. The lessons that you just learned over a lifetime spent achieving are not to be squandered. I think back to the way that Adam begins his story, unsure about who he is and why he is doing it. And at such a young age to realize that he's not living the life that he should be living, then to make those changes. What I kept hearing Adam say is, I knew blank, and I knew that wasn't right for me. I knew that I needed to be smart with my money. I didn't know much, but I knew this. I think Adam has an intuition, and I think all of us do. What I think makes Adam somewhat unique is he actually listens to his and then goes and makes changes in his life. I find that exact same trait with Gary Keller. Gary likes to say, I looked up and I realized blank, and then I made a change. Friends, here's my question. Are you walking through life with the darkest sunglasses on so that you're not noticing the things around you? Or are you walking through life with your eyes wide open? You see, there's three types of people from what I can tell, and I only want to talk about one of them. They're called the journeyers. They are what I believe this audience to be made up of. You're a group of people who wake up every day on the journey through life. You keep your eyes wide open and you are completely at ease with the idea that there might be a different way to do it. The path that you're taking might not be linear, and that one day follows the next, and each day you're going to get a little bit better. You people are the journeyers, and that's one of the things that all of us have in common. Adam Hergenrother is on his journey. And at this stage in it, it's about selling 7,000-8,000 homes a year, which for some of us, you look up and say, gosh, that's way too many. I don't need to do that. That's Adam's journey. I'm interested in your journey. What's going on in your journey, and what actions do you need to take tomorrow such that that journey gets realized and you get to the destination? That's the question. Adam writes his down on a sheet of paper each night so he knows what he's doing the next day. Friends, what are you doing tomorrow to get you where you need to go? That's the question. Go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders. But it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week, we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to themillionaireagentpodcast.com.
millionaireagentpodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.